welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and this hour, science fiction. Later on, X-1 from 1956. But first, it's suspense with the story Heads You Lose from March 11th, 1962 on CBS.
We live in an age of wonders. What was yesterday's impossibility is today's miracle and tomorrow's fact. So perhaps our story today isn't just a story. We only say perhaps, but it might be worth asking yourself, is it just a story? In a moment, Act One of Heads You Lose, starring William Redfield as Steve Kimberly, and written especially for Suspense by Robert Arthur.
It was a nice, chilly morning in October, and Rollo Collins and I were sitting in Rollo's office wondering where our next dollar was coming from. Rollo didn't look hungry since he weighs about 300 pounds and has the appearance of a dishonest cherub, but I knew he was. As for me, Steve Kimberly, I felt like a walking skeleton. Rollo and I were private detectives. Now, I won't try to whitewash us. Let me just say nobody ever actually proved anything against us. But we were, let's face it, a firm people came to in desperation with cases more reputable firms wouldn't handle. And when the intercom buzzed, Rollo and I jumped.
Yes, my dear.
A gentleman by the name of Harrison Ward to see you, Mr. Collins.
Mr. Ward?
That's right, sir. He's an attorney.
Oh, by all means, show him right in.
Yes, sir.
Harrison Ward was a tall, thin guy with a tall, thin face. And as he closed the office door and looked at us, his Adam's apple jumped up and down nervously.
My name is Ward, Harrison Ward. I'm an attorney. I wish to engage you to find someone for me.
Uh-huh. Butter wouldn't have melted in Rollo's mouth as he waved Ward to a chair.
You've come to the right place, Mr. Ward. We find people, that's our business.
Well, this is an unusual case. I want you to find... Well, his name is Joshua Franklin.
Joshua Franklin? Surely you're not serious. Joshua Franklin's disappearance is one of the great mysteries of the century.
Isn't he the Wall Street financier who walked out of his office one day with $100,000 in cash?
That's the man.
Ah, and was never seen again?
Precisely. Hmm. Not the slightest clue to his fate has ever been discovered. I told you it was an unusual case.
But, my dear Mr. Ward, according to my recollection, even when he vanished, Joshua Franklin was a dying man.
Yes. Yes, that's true. His body was riddled with disease. Doctors gave him 6 months at the outside. It was such a pity. That brilliant financial mind, as keen as ever. The body that no miracle of science could keep going.
In that case, Mr. Ward, no matter where he went, Joshua Franklin must have died at least 6 years ago.
Oh, yes. A dozen specialists assure me he cannot possibly still be alive.
And yet you wish us to find him? My dear Mr. Ward, on occasion we do the impossible, but we cannot work miracles.
What you need, Mr. Ward, is a spirit medium.
Please, gentlemen, I assure you, I've come to you in desperation. I know that Mr. Franklin must be dead, and yet...
Yes? Please go on.
3 weeks ago, Joshua Franklin spoke to me on the telephone.
Oh, come on now. You can hardly expect us to believe that.
Well, it couldn't have been anybody else. He identified himself by a secret code.
Did you recognize his voice?
Well, no, it did seem changed. But it may have been a bad connection.
Mr. Ward... You're certain it was Joshua Franklin?
I'd swear to it. The things he reminded me of. Well, no one else knew about them, living or dead.
Oh, I'll bet, especially dead.
Tell me, just why did Joshua Franklin phone you?
He instructed me to sell 10,000 shares of Universal Mining stock, which he owned.
Did he say why?
He promised to explain later. But he never called again.
Probably St. Peter wouldn't let him slip out to use the telephone.
Steve. Mr. Ward, think carefully. Was it a long-distance call?
What else could it have been, Rollo? Very long distance.
I think it was a local call. But with this new direct dialing, it's so hard to tell.
Well, Mr. Ward, we are forced to believe that Joshua Franklin is still alive. In or near the city. We'll take the case. Our fee is $100 a day.
Well, that's quite all right.
In addition, we would expect to collect the reward originally offered. $100,000 if we find him alive, and $50,000 if we find him dead.
So, at last, we had a case, finding a missing millionaire who had been dead 7 years. Harrison Ward gave us a $500 advance and left. My own starting point was that mysterious phone call in the order to sell 10,000 shares of Universal Mining stock. I went to a stockbroker friend. He told me the unexpected sale had created a small panic in Universal Mining. Somebody usually makes money off such panics. My friend came up with a name. The name of an individual who had sold Universal Mining short just before the panic and made about $20,000. The man was an amateur, not an experienced Wall Street operator. I did some checking on the fellow and then reported back to Rollo Collins.
You say his name is Green. Dawson Green?
Mm-hmm.
Don't place it. But somehow it's familiar.
Professor Lawson Green, Ph.D., FRCS, and a lot of other initials. About 10 years ago, he was a professor of neurosurgery at a big medical college.
You say he was. What happened?
Well, he got mixed up in some kind of scandal, something to do with some rather radical experiments he was making, and he resigned. Since then, he's been living all alone out in the suburbs.
And you think he made that telephone call and hoaxed our legal friend, Harrison Ward?
Oh, Rollo, I think he did. He's the only one who cashed in on the deal.
Curious, Steve. Curious. I wonder where he got that confidential stuff he told Ward.
Maybe he knew Joshua Franklin once. Anyway, I'm going to find out. Sit tight, Rollo, while I go out and have words with the mysterious Professor Green. Professor Green's place turned out to be a big stone house set back in a grove of trees and surrounded by a heavy wire fence. Obviously, he liked solitude. I drove into the local village and asked some questions. It turned out the professor had bought the place 7 years before and put in a lot of curious machinery. With him, he'd had a white-haired man he called his brother. Only the brother had never been seen again. Yeah. And just 7 years earlier, Joshua Franklin had disappeared, too. A connection? Oh, I'd have bet my life on it. So, I telephoned Professor Green.
Hello? Hello? What do you want?
Is this Professor Green?
Yes, yes. Who are you? Why are you calling me?
My name is Steve Kimberly. I'd like to talk to you about an old friend of yours, Joshua Franklin.
About who?
Whom is the correct usage, Professor?
I don't know what you're talking about. Goodbye.
Not so fast, Professor. I'm just a fellow who's interested in Joshua Franklin. I'm working alone, but if you insist, I can call in the cops.
Police?
Only, I hate crowds. Don't you?
Very well. Come out to my house. I'll see you.
You see? Sometimes the easy way is the best way. I drove back. The gate was open. I drove up to the front door. A little white-haired man with bright, nervous eyes and shaking fingers let me in.
Well, come in, come in.
Thank you, Professor. I'm glad you agreed to see me, alone.
I haven't any idea what you want. I agreed to see you just to stop this insufferable nuisance.
Well, I'd hardly call one phone call insufferable. However, I'll get down to business. Where is Joshua Franklin? What became of him?
I don't know. I never heard of Joshua Franklin. Now, young man, goodbye.
No, you're not getting rid of me that easily, Professor, so let's start over. Where is Joshua Franklin?
What do you want? Why have you come here? I won't let you ruin my experiment. It's my whole life. And now you're trying to destroy what I've done. Take away everything that I've accomplished after I've given up my career, everything to...
Oh, Professor, Professor, easy, easy. You're going to blow your top here. Now, believe me, I'm not here to destroy anything. I'm here as a friend. I want to help you.
What brought you here, anyway?
That little transaction in Universal Mining stock.
So that's it?
Mm-hmm.
I was afraid. But he told me to do it.
He? You mean Joshua Franklin?
Yes. I mean Joshua Franklin.
Ah. You've got him here in this house? You've kept him a prisoner all these years?
No. I only saved his life. I'm the one who's been the prisoner.
You saved his life? In spite of what the doctor said? Well, man, why all the secrecy? You could have been famous.
You'll see. Yes, I'll take you to Joshua Franklin himself. And then you'll understand.
The little professor led me down a long corridor to a heavy metal door. And as we went, my brain was clicking like an adding machine. I was busy trying to figure out my next step when Green led me down a flight of stairs into a pitch-black room. There was some kind of pump going.
Here we are. Joshua Franklin is in this room.
Uh-huh. Well, turn on the light.
No, not yet. I'll speak to him first. Now, don't be surprised if his voice is odd. Mr. Franklin, I'm here. How are you this morning?
I'm tired. Tired beyond human endurance.
I know. But I'm working on the problem. Soon you'll be a new man again.
Don't bother to lie to me. I know the truth.
You must be patient. It takes time and money.
You'll never succeed, never. I was a fool ever to think you could. I should have died as nature intended. Finish me now and let me have peace.
Please, you must be patient. I'll return later. Now rest. Now you can no longer hear us, unless you'll turn on the light.
Hey, this is a laboratory. Nothing in here but apparatus. Where's Franklin?
He's in here. He was speaking to us through this loudspeaker.
Well, okay, then where is he?
Over there, in the far corner.
Oh, now quit kidding. All I see is that pump, a lot of glass tubing with some red liquid bubbling through it, and on top a black glass ball about 18 inches in diameter.
To save Joshua Franklin, desperate measures were necessary.
What do you mean?
He's inside that glass ball.
What?
The pump keeps him alive.
Inside that glass ball? Well, you couldn't get a man in that thing. You could just about get his... Oh, no.
Exactly, Mr. Kimberly. His head.
I believed him. I had to believe him. We went back upstairs and talked. Green told me how he'd been experimenting with animals, gone too far, and got fired. Then how Joshua Franklin had come to him.
You see, he had heard an exaggerated account of my experiments. He offered me $100,000 to give him a new body.
Put his head on a new body?
Exactly. I told him I couldn't do it. He insisted. He was dying and he was frantic. So, I agreed.
Knowing all the time you couldn't?
Not then, no. But I hoped that someday I could. So, we came here, and I performed the operation. I discarded the disease-ridden body. I placed the healthy head inside the glass, where it's kept alive by a circulating nutrient fluid. Oh, but the details don't matter. All these years, I've struggled in secret, afraid that if the world knew, I'd be called a monster and put in jail. And now it's all for nothing. Nothing. You found me out. You'll call the police.
Now, Professor, take it easy. You've got it all wrong. I'm here to help you.
Help me? How?
Well, for one thing, I'm going to be your business manager.
I don't understand.
Now, look, you need assistance, a big laboratory with those you might succeed yet in learning how to join Franklin's head to another healthy body.
Oh, yes. Yes, I could. I'm sure of it. Oh, but it would take so much money.
That's just it. That'll be my job. Now, downstairs in that lab, you have one of the smartest minds that ever operated on Wall Street. We'll use it to plot stock market operations that will net us millions. That universal mining deal was just penny ante stuff.
Oh, but it won't work. He won't cooperate.
That's all right. Let me argue with him. Maybe I'm more persuasive than you are. I'll talk to him now. Alone. The professor finally agreed. He took me back down into his lab, switched on the apparatus, and left me alone. Mr. Franklin? Mr. Franklin? Can you hear me?
Who's there?
My name is Kimberly. Professor Green has called me in to help him with your case.
It's too late. I have no hope. If you knew how tired I am, how terribly tired.
Now, look, it's only a matter of money. With your help, we can get the money.
I'm not interested. I refuse to help you. I tried to avoid my destiny, and I've been punished for it. But I've suffered enough. In the name of heaven, shut off the pump and let me go.
Now, Mr. Franklin, I don't want to do...
Are you interested in money?
Well, sure I am. Isn't everybody?
If you want money, I'll pay you $200,000. That interest you?
It interests me a whole lot. What do I have to do for it?
Just one thing. Shut off the pump.
Shut off the pump?
Let me find peace at last. If you knew how unendurable it is to spend your life in utter blackness, thinking, thinking, always thinking, please, Mr. Kimberly, tell me that you agree.
Well, why not? Now, maybe you've guessed I hadn't any intention of going through with the deal. But I let him talk, and this is how he explained it to me. His lawyer, Ward, had the key to a safe deposit box, but didn't know what was in it. We arranged I was to phone Ward, put the phone in front of the speaker, and that way Franklin could talk to him like he had before. So I did it. I set everything up for Joshua Franklin's living head in its glass ball to talk to Harrison Ward. Ward was puzzled, but he agreed to give me the key when I arrived, and I hung up fast. Here, Mr. Franklin. It's all set.
Now keep your word. Shut off the pump.
Well, sure, Mr. Franklin, sure. Just as soon as I get the money out of the deposit box.
You promised to stop the pump.
And I will, but I haven't got the money yet. As soon as I have it, I'll turn the pump off.
Ah, thank you. And after all these years, I'll be able to have peace. You're not lying to me. You swear you will stop the pump and let me go?
Sure, Mr. Franklin. I swear it. But of course, I had my fingers crossed when I said it. Shut off that pump and do myself out of $1 million. Not Mrs. Kimberly's little boy, Steve. Only something happened I hadn't figured on. The door burst open and Professor Green rushed in.
I've been listening, but I won't let you do it. I won't.
Now, Professor, listen to me. You're making a mistake.
You can't stop the pump. You can't let Franklin die.
Professor,
this
listen.
This is my whole life's work.
Look.
I'll stop you. I'll kill you.
He shot at me and the shot went wild. I ducked and yelled at him. Professor, let me tell you something.
I'll kill you, do you hear? I'll kill you.
Second shot went over my head and hit the glass ball which held all that remained alive of Joshua Franklin. I looked up, and for just a second, I saw the glass ball split open and fall towards me. Then the professor fired again. This time, both bullets hit me somewhere in the chest or stomach, and that was the last thing I knew as I dived into a pool of darkness 1,000,000 miles deep. How long the darkness lasted, I don't know. A day, a week, a year. But at last, through the darkness that seemed to crush in on me like a ton of black velvet curtains, I heard Rollo's voice.
Steve! Steve, can you hear me? Steve?
I tried to open my eyes and found they were open, and it was still pitch dark.
I moved my lips, and words came out. Rollo, I hear you.
Oh, that's fine, Steve. That's fine. I was worried about you.
Where am I? What happened? I remember Green shooting me, then...
One question at a time, Steve. As for where you are, you're in Washington, D.C.
In Washington?
In a secret room down in the basement of a certain hospital, Steve, my friend. You can expect lots of company. Doctors, scientists, they'll all be here to ask you questions.
Oh, you mean about Green and how he kept Joshua Franklin's head alive?
No, Steve. About you. You see, officially, you're dead.
I'm dead?
You had a very nice funeral in Lawnwood Cemetery.
What are you talking about? Why does your voice sound so funny?
Because you're hearing it through a special hookup. You see, Steve, when you didn't come back, I called on Professor Green. After he killed you, he cracked up completely. But not before he'd done one thing. Not before he'd saved your life. The same way he saved Joshua Franklin.
No. It's not true.
I'm afraid it is. Listen. That's the pump that keeps you alive. The government is taking care of you now, Steve. You're a top secret hush-hush project. But you should feel pretty good. You're immortal now. You're going to live forever in your little glass jar.
Suspense. You've been listening to Heads You Lose, starring William Redfield as Steve Kimberly, and written especially for Suspense by Robert Arthur.
Suspense, on Tuned 2 yesterday from the 11th of March, 1962, a CBS broadcast, which starred William Redfield, a stage, film, and radio actor, kind of busy during the late period of radio's golden era. And he was also part of the revival of radio drama on air with the CBS Radio Mystery Theater, appearing in over 80 of those broadcasts in the mid to late 70s and early 80s. And in many ways, he was known as an actor's actor. 2 years after the episode we just heard, he appeared as Guildenstern in the 1964 production of Hamlet, with Richard Burton as leading man. And from that experience, he penned the book Letters from an Actor, known as a go-to guide for those who want to play Shakespeare. This is an hour of science fiction on Tuned 2 Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Now time for X-1 with the story Reluctant Heroes from December 19, 1956 on NBC.
Countdown for blastoff. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents Tonight, The Reluctant Heroes by Frank M. Robinson. Only Chapman was awake. The others sprawled on bunks 20 inches wide with clearance of 24 inches between layers. They breathed heavily, taking in air that had been breathed for 18 months, subject to certain modifications to remove carbon dioxide and replenish oxygen by the catalytic action of the Harcourt King unit on silicon dioxide. Outside the single quartzite port, the lunar dawn was breaking. The dead black shadows moved across the crater as the green haze of Earthlight gave way to the blinding white of the sun. The telegraph key, which linked the research bunker to the space station in orbit around Earth, chattered as Chapman copied the message into the log pad.
Yeah. Yeah. In a pig's eye. Miserable, no good.
What do they want?
They want me to stay till the next relief ship lands. Go back to sleep.
It's my turn for breakfast.
You gonna stay? Sure. 3 years on the moon, they figure I'll be glad to stay for more. Just raise my salary or give me a bonus.
Every man has his price.
Mm-hmm. They probably figure I like it here.
Chapman, you found a home here on the moon.
Sure. Canned coffee, canned beans, canned pills, and canned air till your insides feel like they're plated with tin. The little scientific home of tomorrow. 10 steps in any direction. A charming place where you can't take a shower, you can't brush your teeth, and your insides don't even work right.
Why did you tell him?
No.
You kept it short.
Check the oxy cycle before you turn on the stove.
What's the matter? You sore or something, Chapman?
Why shouldn't I be?
All I'm trying to do is get a good man to stay on a job a while longer.
Well, they got a fat chance.
They figure you found a home here, right, Doe?
Why don't you guys shut up till morning? Some of us have to stay here, you know. Some of us aren't going back today.
All right. You might as well get up and get a day's work today before the relief rockets do. I got the coffee ready.
Coffee? Been in a can so long I can taste the glue on the label.
They send up an oil can. These elbow joints make me feel like the Tin Woodman and the Wizard of Oz.
You can't lubricate vacuum seal joinings. Let it squeak. At least it doesn't leak air.
Get that back. That thug for me, will you, Donnelly?
Lean over, you fat slob. You put on 3 more pounds, you won't get off the moon. You won't get through the airlock.
Yeah. Hey, chap.
Hmm?
Do you think we ought to radio the space station and see if they've left there yet?
I talked to them on the last call. The relief ship left 12 hours ago. They should get here in about 6.5 hours.
Chap, you know what I'm thinking? You've been here twice as long as the rest of us. What's the first thing you're going to do once you get back?
I don't know. I guess I was trying not to think about that.
I haven't been here 3 years like you have, but I've got plans. What are you going to do?
Well, I'm going to rent a room in the Hotel Astor over Times Square and just sit at the window and watch the people on the street. And I think I'll see somebody.
What somebody?
Oh, just somebody. What are you going to do, Donnelly?
Well, I'm going to do something practical. First of all, I'm going to turn over my geological samples to the government. Then I'm going to sell my life story to the movies. And I think I'll get drunk.
How about you, Julius?
Well, first, I'll get rid of my allocations to the expedition. And then I think I'll go home and see my wife. Then I'll take off my spacesuit.
I thought all members of the groups were supposed to be single.
They are, and I can see the reasons for it, but who could pass up the money the commission was paying?
If I had to do it all over again, me.
Hey, hand me a fishbowl.
You know, chap, it won't seem like the same old moon without you on it. Like they say in the Army, you never had it so good.
You'll find a home here. All right, button up. And remember to check your suits for leaks and check the valves of your oxygen tanks.
I've gone out at least 500 times. You've checked me every time.
And I'd check you 500 more. It only takes one mistake. And watch out for blisters under the pumice crust. You go through one of those and that's it, brother.
Okay, I'm checked.
Klein, I never knew you were married.
There wasn't much sense in talking about it. You just get to thinking and there's nothing you can do about it. If you talk about it, it just makes it worse.
She let you go without any fuss, hmm?
No, she didn't make any fuss. I don't think she'd like to see me go either. At least I hope she didn't. You got a girl back home?
Yes.
No, you never mentioned that either.
For the same reason you didn't mention your wife. You get to thinking about it.
You gotta get married when you get back?
Yeah.
Hurry up, will you, Klein? I'm sweating. Somebody ought to build in underarm sprays and spacesuits.
Chap, why does somebody have to stay here for stopover?
Lots of reasons. You can't get a whole relief crew and let them take over cold. They have to know where things are, how things work, what to watch out for. Then, because you've been here for a year and a half and you know the ropes, you have to watch them to see that they stay alive in spite of themselves.
Why was it you on the first trip? You're not a scientist.
No, I was the pilot on the first ship. When it occurred to us that someone was going to have to stay over, I volunteered. I thought the others were so important that it was better they take their samples and data back to Earth when the first relief ship came.
You wouldn't do it again, though, would you?
No.
You think Dole will do as good a job as you did?
He volunteered.
Yeah, he volunteered because he thought it would make him look like a hero.
I've lost 3 years up here, and I don't intend to lose any more.
Okay, okay.
Check your valve.
All right, check. I checked Geiger, CR, oxy, and scintilla readings. Everything okay. You packing, chap?
Yeah. Oh, listen, Dole, I've got 3 or 4 shirts here that are a little too big. I got them from Drive's back in the first group. You want them?
Chap, do you think they'll ever have relief ships up here more often than 18 months? I mean, considering the advance
No,
of...
I don't. Not for 10 years. Fuel's too expensive and the trip's too hazardous. Why, on freight charges alone, you're worth your weight in platinum when they send you up here. Won't be so bad. There'll be new men up here. You'll pass a lot of time just getting to know them.
Yeah. Listen, chap. I'm engaged back home, you know. Nice girl. You'd like her if you knew her. Right here. Let me show you. This is a picture of Alice taken at a picnic when we were together.
Mm-hmm.
See, it's a kind of bad angle because she's really got a better figure than that. But... well, we expected to get married when I got back. I never told her about stopover. She thinks I'll be home tomorrow. I kept thinking that somehow I...
You want to trade places with me, don't you? You thought I might stay for stopover again in your place.
Well, chap, I know you want to go home, but I couldn't ask any of the others. You're the only one who was qualified. Look. You know my father's pretty well fixed. Chap, we could make it worth your while. It wouldn't mean 18 more months, but they'd be well-paid months.
Forget it, Dole. You're staying and I'm going home.
Off the trail.
Well, come out of the shadow.
I've got a meter jammed over here.
You know the regulations. Chapman will kick like a steer. Keep in sight at all times.
I'll only be a minute. I've got a short circuit in my instrument.
Time for 10-minute check.
I've got my hands full. My valves are all right.
I know it. You know it. But the book says valve and leak check every 10 minutes.
Hey.
Come out. What?
You see a flash?
Where?
Past Camel's Hump. There. What is that, northern light?
No. No, come over here, you fat geologist.
Oh, what's the matter with you?
That's the relief rocket. Come on.
Hey, where are you going?
I'm going over to the ship. Breathe some air that's a little less used.
You think we ought to? Chapman said to stay.
Forget Chapman. We're going home. I want to see that beautiful ship. Come on.
Well, how about the 10-minute check?
Just a formality. Forget it. This is Christmas and 4th of July rolled into one.
Okay, let's go. I can just taste some clean, fresh air.
We gotta see it when we top the hump.
Maybe we better check. Wait a minute. I'll swing my gauge up. Connolly.
Yeah?
How long have we been out?
Oh, about a half hour.
Yeah? Well, look at your gauge.
Well, what are you... Oh.
If we'd started for the rocket, we never would have made it. We were strangled halfway down the hump. Come on, we better get back to the bunker.
Check the lock seal.
Okay.
All right, open the inner door. Close the lock.
Get me out of this fishbowl. It's down. The relief rocket, it's down on the other side of Camel's Hump.
What a beautiful-looking ship. What a beautiful ship.
They must be on their way over here now.
Chap, they're on their way. We're going home today.
Get your RA unit out of that suit and into the dryer.
All right. Okay. What's eating you, Dole?
Listen, just because the relief rocket lands, it doesn't mean your RA unit is going to dry up by itself. That goes for you, too, Donnelly.
Okay. Hey, Chapman.
Yeah?
He's taking it pretty hard.
He volunteered.
Yeah, he volunteered.
What a beautiful, beautiful ship.
Teaching at the university, who took over a seminar at the AEC?
Hey, look what we got here. Chap, come here.
What's the matter?
Hey, look what this one's got, a box.
Yeah?
Look inside, dirt, ordinary dirt with grass.
Grass. Hey, fellas, it feels like grass.
That's right, yeah. It's real grass.
Yeah, and real valuable. Do you realize that current freight rates up here, it's worth about $10 a blade?
Oh, shut up.
Hey, bud, you mind if I chew a blade?
Mr. Chapman.
Yes?
Oh, Mr. Chapman. My name's Eberline, captain of the relief ship. I understand you're in charge here.
Yeah, you might say so. They didn't have a captain on the first ship, just a pilot and crew. Dole, turn up the oxy cycle on the Harcourt unit.
Well, things have advanced somewhat, huh? Look, Mr. Chapman, is there any place where we can talk together privately?
Well, come around the corner of my locker. It's about as private as we can get.
Oh, good.
What's on your mind?
I've always wanted to meet the man who spent more time here than anybody else. You mind if I smoke?
You better ask Dole. He's in charge now.
Oh. You know, we have big plans for the research station here.
Oh? I haven't heard of any.
Oh, yes, big plans. They're working on unmanned open-side rockets now that can carry cargo. Sheet steel for more bunkers like this. Mm-hmm. Enable us to enlarge the unit. Have a series of bunkers all linked together. Make good laboratories and good living quarters for you people. Have a little privacy for a change.
Well, they could use a little privacy up here.
Oh, they could. Well, that's one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you, Chapman. The commission talked it over and they'd like to see you stay. They feel if they're going to enlarge it, add more bunkers and have more men up here, that a man of practical experience should be running things. They figure you're the only man who's capable and has had that experience.
Is that all?
Well, naturally, you'd be paid well. I don't imagine any man would like being here all the time. They're prepared to double your salary, maybe even a bonus in addition. They want you to have full charge. You'd be director of Lunar Laboratories.
Oh, a title, too.
Well, the commission said they'd be willing to consider anything else you had in mind. If it's more money...
The answer is no. I'm not interested in more money for staying because I'm not interested in staying. Money can't buy it, Captain.
Look,
I'm sorry. I'm afraid you'd have to stay up here to appreciate that.
I'm afraid you don't understand the importance
of this. Captain, come over here to the port.
Yes?
Now, look out there about 100 yards.
You mean where that mound of stones?
That's right. We made that cross out of condensed milk cans slid over iron bars. You get out there, you can still see the footprints in the pumice that we gathered around. More than 18 months ago, but there's been no wind to wear those tracks away. They'll be there forever.
Oh, I see. Well, who was it? Griesbach?
But Dixon, we never got Dries back out of the crevasse in Tycho.
What happened?
You want to know? I can give it to you in detail. Sit down and listen.
Well, what do you mean?
Just wait a minute and I'll show you.
Well, why? What is it?
Regulations. When someone goes out alone, we have to monitor his radio, tape recorded. We had the recorder open when Dixon went out. I want you to hear it.
Well, all right.
I've got the tape right here. It'll take me a minute to thread it up.
Look, Chapman, you don't have
to... Listen, I want you to listen.
Moon, moon, great big silvery moon, won't you please shine down on me?
Regulations. He had to keep saying something so we know he was all right. Most of the guys just sing.
Gentlemen, I'm getting a lovely sonar reading. Hey, if anybody wants to set up a tombstone concession on the moon, this is the spot. Lovely marble, granite, and rock suitable for lobbies here. It's that old devil moon that...
He should have been making a 10-minute check on his oxygen level. He was a good kid. All wrapped up in science. Being on the moon was the opportunity of a lifetime. He thought so much about it that he forgot a lot of little things, like how to stay alive. This was the day before the second group came.
All right, gentlemen. I have 3 or 4 more readings to take, and I'll be right in. I'm doing fine. Little stuffy. It's almost as if... Hey, somebody get a fix on me, huh? How far am I from the bunker? Must have sprung a leak. When... Hey, when did I take the last 10-minute check? How far am I? Down to 22.
We took a fix. He was a half hour out.
He couldn't make that. Listen. You gotta come out and get me. You gotta come out and get me. It's down to 22. Hey, is somebody listening back there? Hey, is somebody listening? I figure I've got 10 minutes. Just 10 minutes. Listen, you can make it in 10 minutes. I'll meet you towards Camel's Hump. I'll start now. Come and get me, you hear? Come and get me. Chapman? Are you listening, Chapman? Can you hear me? I'm running. Camel's Hump. Hot. The heat. The RA unit's overloading. Can't dry it up. Gotta run. No use. I can't run. The unit heats up. Gauge is down to 15. I can't make it. I'm gonna sit down now. You'll find me at number 7 radiation meter, about 10 yards off the trail. I'm gonna sit down. Sit down next to a rock. I'm getting dizzy. Hey, remember we used to argue? Do you strangle from no oxy or pass out from CO2. Keep tuned to this channel, boys. You'll find out. It's that old devil moon that you... Oh, boy, the earth's going round and round. Chap? You can't get me.
chance of even 15 minutes. We didn't even go out. There wasn't any sense to it.
Did you record after that?
Yeah, it's on the tape. You don't want to hear it. We've never played it back.
That's why we want you to stay, Chapman. We don't want any more like Dixon.
You don't get the point, Captain. I don't want to be the next Dixon. I'm going home now.
But you're...
Bob Dole is staying for stopover. If there's something important about the project or any changes, you better tell him before you go.
Chap, here's one for you. Donnelly.
Yo.
Dole.
Yeah.
Dole. Donnelly.
Yo.
Ah, Klein. Dole.
Yeah.
Donnelly.
Yeah. Boy, did I miss an opportunity. I could have had a year's subscription to the Ladies' Home Journal combined with the American Farmer, all for half price.
All right, men. All right. My departure time is an hour and a half.
Hey, my sister had twins.
Hey, Chap. Aren't you going to read your letter?
I read it. It's a short letter.
Is something wrong?
No, there's nothing wrong. Dole.
What is it, Cap?
Get your stuff and leave with the others.
What? What do you mean?
What are you talking about, Chap? Get your bag and let's go.
I'm not going back.
Well, what's the matter with you? Did you suddenly decide you don't like the blue sky and the trees? Come on, let's
go. Look, Julius, I'm not going back. I haven't got anything to go back for.
Was it the letter?
Yeah. Dear Joe... This isn't going to be a nice letter, but I thought it best you should know before you come home.
Oh.
Isn't very original, is it? 3 years is a long time, and 250,000 miles is a long distance. You know what, Junior? She can look up in the night sky now and tell him how she was once engaged to the man in the moon. That's a real conversation piece, isn't it? Very funny. Go ahead, Dole. Get going.
You're doing a much braver thing than you may think, Mr. Chapman.
Yeah, sure.
Like the looks of the moon going away from it, Mr. Dole?
It looks a lot better this way.
I suppose you'll be glad to get home.
I'd rather not talk about it. They were kidding Chapman this morning. They said he found a home on the moon.
If we'd stayed an hour or so more, he might have changed his mind and left after all.
I'd offered him money. I didn't want to stay for stopover. I was a coward and I offered him money to stay in my place.
Well, we're all cowards once in a while. But your offer of money had nothing to do with his staying. He stayed because he had to stay. Because we made him stay.
I don't understand.
Chapman had a lot to go home for. He was engaged to be married.
I know.
We got her to write him a letter breaking it off. We knew that it meant that he'd lost one of his main reasons for wanting to go back. I think perhaps he still would have left if we'd stayed and argued him into going. But we left before he could change his mind.
That was a lousy thing to do.
We had no choice. We didn't use it except as a last resort.
I don't know of any girl who would have written such a letter if she was really in love with a guy like Chapman. No matter what your reasons.
There was only one girl who would have. Ginny Dixon. You see, Chapman's girl was Dixon's sister. She understood what we were trying to tell her. That the new shift had to be safe. That there had to be someone who had to take over and keep those boys alive. She understood that. Because her brother died up there.
You mean he's the only one? I couldn't have done the job?
Oh, look, Dole. Chapman knows how to live on the moon. He's like a trapper who spent all his time in the forest. He knows it like the palm of his hand. He never makes mistakes. He never fails to check things. And he isn't a scientist. He would never become so preoccupied with research that he'd fail to make checks, and he can watch out for those who do make mistakes. He understood that, too, all too well. It costs a lot of money to send ships up there and establish a colony. You have to have the best man for the job. You get them even if they don't want to do it. Personal lives and viewpoints are expendable. It's got to be that way. There's too much at stake.
It's a cold place, the moon.
You're an odd bunch of guys, you and the others and the groups. Few of you, Dole, come up for the glamour. I know. None of you really like it. And none of you are enthusiastic about it. You're all reluctant to come in the first place, for the most part. You're a bunch of, well, of pretty reluctant heroes.
18 months. He'll be up there 18 more months.
Personally, I don't feel happy about that. I don't like having to mess up other people's lives. I hope I won't have to again. Maybe somehow, some way, this one can be patched up. We'll try to.
18 months.
In the meantime, on behalf of the commission and myself, I feel like a cheap, rotten heel.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine.
X-1 on Tuned to Yesterday from the 19th of December, 1956 on NBC, bringing to a close this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.